Hey everybody, you're listening to the first edition of the Food Steen here at heritageradionetwork.com. My name is Michael Harlan Turkel. I am your host. I am a food photographer, do the back of the house project for both Edible Brooklyn, Edible Manhattan, and I'm also the photo editor. Check us out on the website again, heritageradionetwork.com. And you can call in live, 718-497-2128, or email us at info@heritageradionetwork.com. You can also find us on podcasts or iTunes. Sponsor today is Hearst Ranch. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1965, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable, native grasslands of Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more information, go to www.hearstranch.com. Well, on our first edition, it only made sense, whereas I am a food photographer, to invite other food photographers and talk a little bit of shop. So I'm happy to have Quentin Bacon, Francesco Tonelli, and Andrew Scavani. Everybody say a collective hi.
Hi, everyone. Hi.
Excellent. We're just going to kind of talk shop a little bit and tell you a little of what it's like to be a professional food photographer. I think it's a very kind of glorified occupation at the moment. Restaurants are in vogue, Food Network TV shows about reality in the kitchen. But a lot of people don't know that there's a whole another occupation of food photography, which helps promote the media and, you know, helps show people the beautiful food that they get to eat. I'm going to start with Quentin, who I know from many cookbooks, most recently the Blue Ribbon Bakery, Bromberg Brothers Cookbook, Aromas of Aleppo. Who wrote that book? Because I don't want to mispronounce his name. It's Pupa?
Oh.
Pupa Dweck?
Pupa Dweck, yeah.
Pupa Dweck. And the upcoming fall 2010, Sarah Beth's Kitchen. Francesco Tonelli, born in Italy, raised in Milan, is a master chef, food stylist, taught at the CIA, has shot and worked for La Cucina Italiana for years, and now shoots for New York Times, and clients everywhere. You know, I see Conagra, General Mills, Kraft, PepsiCo, Planters, and 11 Madison Park here in Manhattan, Jacopo Fly, and then Andrew Scrivani, who also works for the New York Times and has contributed cookbooks by Mark Bittman, Nigella Lawson, has a wonderful food blog called MakingSundaySauce.com, and preps and styles much of his own food. And I think that's where I want to start. I want to talk to Francesco and Andrew specifically about their background in cooking, because Andrew does, what would you say, about 95% of your own cooking and styling?
Yeah, about 95% of what I shoot. If it's not for an outside client, if I'm doing it in my own studio, I choose to cook and style the food myself.
And do you have any background in cooking, or was it just a hobby interest?
Well, I don't have a professional background in cooking, but I've been, being raised in an Italian household, being familiar with the kitchen was something that was almost compulsory. So I had my mother, my grandmother, my great-grandmother in the same kitchen teaching me how to cook and bake.
So it's true heritage. It's
absolutely.
It's innate. It's in the blood. And then Francesco, also of Italian descent, was it a familiar thing, or was it a professional thing that made you go into cooking prior to photography?
It was a professional thing. My brother is a chef, my older brother, and so...
Where is he a chef?
He's a chef right now in Toronto in a restaurant. He's been working almost 30 years in Montreal before, and before that in Milano, where we grew up together.
Oh, excellent. Now, what restaurant in Toronto? You can plug it. You can you know, advertise for your brother a little bit. I don't mind.
I don't think I remember the name right now.
Excellent. We'll put that on the website eventually. And then... you taught at the Culinary Institute of America up until 2005, whereas you then set out to be a professional, full-time professional commercial photographer. And why that transition out of the kitchen?
It's been like a sort of love, that like a hidden love for me. I started getting acquainted and having a taste of food photography back in Italy. When I worked for La Cucina Italiana, I was a consultant for the magazine, and I was developing recipes for them, for featuring in the magazine in their monthly issues. And I was also testing them in their test kitchen and then styling them for the pictures.
So you had everything else covered and you just got an itchy trigger finger and just wanted to start taking photos as well?
Actually, no. It didn't even cross my mind.
Yeah.
But I've been spending like 7 years of my professional career alongside with professional photographers that were taking pictures of my food. But the entire work was so mystical to me. They were working back then. I'm talking about 1990.
Yeah.
So they were working with these large format cameras, and they were putting these slides in and then twisting them around. And I had no idea what was going on. And I believe one time they let me look back behind the camera and everything was upside down. So I said, forget it. Yeah. This is not for me.
Yeah. Well, Francesco had also told us that he is a baby of the digital photographer era because he never had to deal with analog or film, which I'd like to transition talking to Quentin for a second, whose heritage is actually Australian, and found out that his mother, Miss Vo Bacon, was it one of the first food shows in Australia?
Yeah, she had started off the radio station for the ABC and then food show after that.
Yeah. So starting from there, going into shooting, how did you make that transition? I mean, you already had food in the family.
I think it was just that, ticking the list at school, working out what you wanted to do, what you wanted to be later on in life. And, I didn't want to be caught up in a corporate world or office, and travel is my main passion, and restaurants and food, and just seemed to be the logical direction to go.
Yeah, and what kind of school or education?
Started after I finished high school, started assisting, working for a couple of studios. I worked for a place in Melbourne called the Trobe Studio, and they had four photographers. One did fashion, one did food. There's quite a big food photographer down there. There's a German guy, Eddie Gaber, who just shot everything tungsten, large format. So I had this good mix of shooting and working in different fields and different areas with different photographers. And after summer, finished, ended up going to RMIT down in Melbourne and started, and they had two directions you could go, either art or medical, and went to the art direction, lasted about 3-4 months, and realized that the guys, after finishing the 4 years, were trying to get the job that I just left. And I ended up ringing the studio I was at back again, saying, hey, is there any chance to get my old job back?
I mean, you had just used your life to kind of amalgamate this profession that you really wanted, so I mean... Yeah. We all kind of have to count our blessings for being able to do something that we really enjoy and, are passionate about and still want to do after all these years of, cooking and shooting and food. I wanted to talk a little bit about food photography today, magazines, cookbooks, other media on the internet, more specifically about a New York Times article that just came out in the past couple months about people shooting their own food. It was talking about how people go to restaurants, take a quick photo either with their camera phone or have, now digital SLRs, sometimes better than what I carry around. But make the meal, well, in my eyes, disjunctive. Because I at least feel that food should be enjoyed in this kind of, temporal environment, ephemeral thing that the chef creates. And to take away from it and pause and then do your own thing when it's not really set up for that sometimes takes away from the dining experience and from the food itself. I don't know if you read this article, but what are your thoughts about food bloggers taking photographs or, trends like food spotting, which is an iPhone app to take pictures of your food and then show to everybody where you ate and what you ate and critique it? Does it take away from the profession of food photography as a whole, from the quality?
Well, the article that you're referencing was attached to a Q&A that they had asked me to do for Diner's Journal. Excuse me. And the question that you're posing was one of the first questions that some of the readers had put out there, was this kind of anger at food bloggers for having interrupted the dining process by flashing their cameras in the middle of a dining room or asking people to wait or readjusting the table or standing up or having that interruption. And I referenced Randy Cohen and the ethicist, about how you might want to take some of the tips I'm giving about photography and apply them in an ethical way in a restaurant, because we had that question was pretty prevalent.
Yeah. I mean, still in my eyes, the best thing that you can shoot with is natural light and a prime lens. And I don't see that happening often in restaurants, especially late at night, you know, with the glow of the candles and, you know, the somber light of the sun setting. It's hard to get even a moody photograph for, I would say, amateurs or professionals. So what are tips that you can give people about photographing their own food, even in that situation, outside of prime lenses and natural light?
Go to lunch instead of dinner.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
Right. Basically, when you're shooting food, you want to shoot as quick as you can while it's out hot and fresh. And when you're in a restaurant and it's all tungsten lit, it's never going to look that fabulous.
Yeah, I know. It's so behind the eight ball, because not just tungsten. I mean, I think it's one of the most mixed light situations, other than, you know, going to a show at Madison Square Garden with a lighting show behind it. So stainless silver doesn't help bouncing flashes or lights. And so when you go into a situation to photograph food, do you look for control, or do you look for the chef to control the shoot itself? Do you have a conversation with them about what you want to do, when, or do they just put plates out for you and you start photographing away?
You try to strike up a relationship, because, I mean, it's their food that they're sort of putting forward. So, I mean, in being, you know, sort of respectful for them, you want to shoot what they're bringing out. It's like Morimoto, his food is quite theatrical, and it's high and it's sculptural. You know, I mean, I can't do that sort of thing. So you have to set that sort of situation. You sort of stand back and you shoot what's there. But majority of the time, it's a collaboration, and you're sort of working out what comes out. And sometimes, like if there's a sauce or a dew that sort of gets spread over there, you wait and say, okay, we'll just throw that on at the very last minute, just before we're about to shoot, because otherwise it starts to congeal and gets cold.
Yeah, and coming from cooking backgrounds like Francesco, what kind of sauces do you watch out for? Do you oil salads? Do you salt proteins? I mean, are there certain steps of cooking and food styling that you wouldn't traditionally do if serving to a customer, but you would do if serving to a guest? I mean, showing to a photographer?
Not particularly. I have to say, one of the things that I probably the reason why I started doing what I'm doing is that I enjoy to cook the food as if I am about to eat. Actually, you know, the majority of the food that I shot ended up in my belly after the shot.
That's what we call sustainable food photography.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And so there really no, I think that it shows in a somehow in an inexplicable way. If the food tastes good, it shows in the picture. And I make a point to season it as if I was going to eat it. And actually, I season it because I'm going to eat it afterwards. It's very rare that a type of food stands out for so long that I'm not going to eat it. It's a rare occasion. So most of the time, that food really gets eaten. The only thing I would say I try to pay attention sometimes might be the temperature of the food. I might not make it as hot as if I was going to eat it right away, because of the tendency of creating a little bit of skin or just drying out.
Or things wilting. Or
exactly.
Letching out juices.
But other than that, it's pretty much real.
Then on that note, how important are working with stylists so you can separate yourself from just cooking the food, plating it, photographing, to, you know, have somebody else there to almost be your sous chef on the photo shoot?
I have to say, like Andrew Scrivani, I style, if not 95-94% of the food that I shoot. And I take pride of it. I enjoy it. But I have to say that in a few occasions, I have worked with food stylists. And the first time that it happened to me, I had mixed feelings, because I didn't really want to give that part of my work into somebody else's hands. But when it happened, I felt like I had nothing to do. In a way, I felt so good. I said, oh my God, today is so easy. Yeah. I should do this all the time.
It's like having a half day off. Yeah. It really is.
I felt guilty.
Yeah, but is that kind of like expediting in the kitchen? I mean, it doesn't feel like you're actually on the line or in the heat. But
well, not particularly, because I think the collaboration that there is with a good food stylist, which I had the privilege of working with a few very good ones, it's such a mutual respect that at that point I'm not expediting their work, but I let them do what they know how to do well. And of course, there is cooperation. We might discuss what we are expecting, what we want to achieve, but I'm not telling them how to do it because, you know, they know exactly what they need to be doing.
Now, a question for all three of you is, the majority of your work done in studios, or is it done on location? And if one or the other, how does it differ from, you know, the latter?
Well, I know I do most of my work in a studio, but there are occasions when you're in an environment, and I think it differs greatly. I mean, because you have so much control in a studio, and when you're in an environment, you have to use what's there, and there's opportunities there artistically, but it's also some challenges that are different than when you have complete control in a studio.
Yeah, have you ever walked into a restaurant situation on location, so you don't have that kind of additive control of, you know, your own lighting, your own, you know, elements, and just been completely frazzled by how the shoot went, or, you know, what was being served to you?
Not frazzled, but I walked into a situation last week at the Modern that I was expecting one environment. I got a completely different environment and had to make do with what was there. But that happens often, I think, in restaurants. You walk in and you have one expectation of what's going to be there, and you get something completely different.
Yeah, we were talking outside before the show about, you know, the importance of getting shot lists, the importance of clients being as forthright and upfront about what they want done. Because like a restaurant, you know, like a beautifully plated dish, there's a lot that goes into it prior to it being put in front of you. So, I mean, what are important things that you ask for or need from clients prior to going into a restaurant, more than just shot list of the dish? Do you look for the ingredients, how it was prepared, so you can even talk through those processes? Or is the final product the most important part of the shot for you?
So, sometimes when you're shooting, the actual steps beforehand, before the final dish comes out, like if it's a stew or something like that, can actually look better in the pot itself than being served on the plate. You know,
mm-hmm.
And with other, you know, if there's something bubbling in a fry pan, you know, before it gets plated, you've got the oil or the bubble sort of splattering around, a bit of smoke and steam coming off. I mean, that can sort of, it's that point before it goes on the plate actually tends to look better.
When I remember growing up, I didn't necessarily see all those process shots. When do you think that transition started happening, or what cookbooks influence you to shoot more like that?
I don't think there's any cookbooks that influenced me in that direction. It's just being in the kitchen while it was happening and just turning around and going, oh, I love that. And you can always shoot it when it comes to the table on the plate. So from that point of view, it was more just seeing what was happening as it was progressing.
Yeah, well, I think... Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I said, if you would have asked me, I would have said Quentin Bacon's books.
Excellent. When we come back from commercial, we're going to talk a little bit more about cookbooks and about recent ones that you've done. Funny enough, Quentin had just shot Odo's newest cookbook.
Mario's.
Yeah, and Mario's eating some pizza at Roberta's today. So we'll be back. I'm Michael Harlan Turkel, and you're listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Welcome back to The Food Scene. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com. We were just talking about cookbooks in general, about influences and which ones, you know, a couple of have recently been doing. And funny enough, Mary Batali's eating some pizza at Roberta's, and Quentin just shot his most recent Otto cookbook. And I also want to talk about a couple of the other cookbooks that you've done, like Blue Ribbon, Bromberg Brothers, The Aromas of Aleppo, Sarah Beth's Kitchen, and other clients. I think William Sonoma, you've shot for Ina Garden's cookbooks,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, Ina's actually just worked with her the other day and finished a book that her latest one will probably coming out in 6 months.
Excellent.
Or a year.
Which have been some of your favorite projects and why?
Actually, I did this one recently called Good to the Grain. It was shot in Los Angeles. There's a baker down there, and she had no budget whatsoever. And she just, everything she cooked with was totally sort of organic or genetically modified grains. And I mean, she was so passionate about what she did, and she had a young family, no money whatsoever, and asked if I wanted to do the book. And it was like, yeah, okay, I'll come down to LA for a couple of days.
So she asked you?
Yeah, and the publishing company had a chat, and it was great. We shot, I think we shot the whole book over 4 days, and just shot in a kitchen, in a living room, and got a prop stylist and brought some stuff in, and you know, she did the cooking, and I sort of helped her with the plating of it. It was a great experience.
Yeah, so do you prefer shooting cookbooks to magazine spreads too?
I like doing a bit of everything.
Yeah.
Sort of cross-section, breaking up. Cookbooks are nice because you're working for a week or 2 weeks, so it's sort of in one area.
Ingrained, embedded.
Yeah, sort of magazine work, it ends up being lifestyle or travel because it mixes a lot with doing a lot of people stuff as well. So it ends up being sort of running around different places and locations. And
excellent. And Francesco drove down from upstate New York near Kingston today, where he has a nice little studio. Do you do a lot of traveling, or are you mainly in your studio shooting assignments for clients, New York Times?
I would say it's a bit a mix of both. I do a lot of shooting here in New York City, and I've been doing a little bit of traveling, but I would say the majority of my work is in New York City, and it's spread between New York City and my studio.
And are those of the bigger commercial clients? Because I saw on your website that you work with ConAgra, General Mills, Kraft, PepsiCo, Planters. So a lot of it's studio setups, but that doesn't necessarily have a chef.
Correct. And those are the big commercial clients like that. Situation where either I style the food, or those are the few instances where I have been working with a food stylist.
And as far as restaurants in New York, I noticed that you've done work for 11 Madison Parks.
I'm actually working with them right now. We are shooting their cookbook.
Oh, fantastic!
And that's going to be like an ongoing project for the next 3 seasons. We are shooting the spring session now, and then soon to be the summer, and then fall and winter. And so that's going to be a very exciting project, and also an ongoing relationship.
Big congrats to you and to them, too, for
that
recent Beard Award for Daniel Hume and all the accolades for 11 Madison Park. Just the transformation in the last few years.
It's a fantastic place to be working with. It's truly exciting, and especially because of my background as a chef, it's extremely rewarding and thrilling to see how this operation works, like at top level and functioning like a Swiss clock.
Yeah, very much. And he is he is Austrian, isn't he?
No, he's Swiss.
He's Swiss. Okay, so that
no.
That made sense.
That makes sense.
And Andrew, you recently were talking about a couple cookbook projects.
Yeah, we shoot the Martha Rose Shulman's Recipes for Health on the web. It's a part of the health, fitness, and nutrition section of the New York Times on the web. It's web exclusive. And what they've done, Rodale Publishing decided they were going to publish a cookbook of basically every recipe that was on the website for about 18 months. Whew. We've been at it for a little over 2 years now, and we put out a new recipe every day of the week, during the week, Monday through Friday. There's a new recipe, and this has been ongoing for over 2 years now. So they've decided that they wanted to make cookbooks out of the images and the recipes. So Rodale bought up everything they needed to do, and they've assembled it. So there was no additional shooting necessary. Everything that was already shot.
So it was all just stockpiled.
It was already stockpiled, yeah. And there's a lot more where that came from because there's a new image every day.
Yeah.
So they pile up after a while. But
that should be a tip to all photographers out there. Never stop shooting because it can eventually become, you know, a compilation or you just never want to put down that camera because you never know what can come of it. From that, I kind of wanted to talk about favorite assignments. Outside of, you know, necessarily just cookbooks, magazines. It could be food-related, which I prefer for this show, or not food-related. What were some of the biggest highlights of your career thus far shooting food?
Well, for me, aside from this 11 Madison Park cookbook, which I'm extremely excited about shooting, I am actually doing another cookbook with the Culinary Institute of America, and I am actually being one of the authors together with two other Italian chefs. And the cookbook is going to be called Pasta at Home. And so it's a cookbook all about pasta and risottos and gnocchi. And so we are coming up with the recipes, we are cooking them, styling them, and I take the pictures. So. Wow. That's definitely very exciting for me.
Doesn't sound too bad.
And no.
How often do you guys buy food for yourselves, or do you feel like you're fed on set often enough?
Often enough.
Yeah. Almost every day.
Yeah, let's see. The test of a good recipe is, or when they're actually playing around, you're shooting it, it's when you want to have that one for lunch. It's like, okay, I want to eat that for lunch.
Yeah.
That's sort of the major test, I think.
Then speaking of recipes, what are some of your favorite recipes that you've come away with from your shoots themselves?
God, so bloody many of them. There's one that comes to mind, which was for an Italian cookbook, and it was just this basic tomato sauce that you just tore the tomatoes in pieces, put them in a glass bowl, put the oil, vinegar, salt, and just let it out all day, just sort of, you know,
yeah, just room temperature, just let it stew.
And just let it stew. And then you just made your pasta and you just threw it in last minute. And it was just so simple. It was great summer. It was a really great summer pasta.
Your favorite recipes from shoots, from assignments?
Well, I just recently did a pork vindaloo recipe that was just fantastic. It was, I think it was John Willoughby's recipe. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It was part of an Alex Witchell column. And it was just... It lived in the fridge for days and just got better as you kept going back to it. And it was a huge pile of stew. So we were at it for at least a week.
That's a nice
and
perk.
It was a terrific recipe, and it was something that I would definitely make again.
And Francesco?
And I did an article for Maxim magazine about 2 years ago. And I've been traveling several cities for getting some of their best food from special locations. And I remember a place in New Jersey, like a Portuguese restaurant, roasting these little suckling pigs. And it's amazing how they make them. They cook them like 8 or 10 of them at a time in this huge oven. And they come out completely crispy on the outside. And the meat is so delicate and juicy and coming off the bone. That
I'm glad we're on the radio because I think everyone here is salivating. It is an appetizing sight, but not necessarily seeing us, you know, wanting this food so bad. Recipes. Do you think that being a food photographer has made you a better cook as well? I mean, are there a lot of techniques that you pick up from shoots that you wouldn't have known prior?
Well, definitely. For what I'm concerned, my experience that I just began at 11 Madison Park it's unbelievable. It's opening my eyes what Daniel Hamm is doing in terms of sous vide and molecular cuisine and you know, his entire style. It's so much eye-opening for me. I'm learning and I'm seeing textures and techniques that I wasn't aware as a chef before. So
well, that is a wonderful pitch for the book, too. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. And it comes out next year by Little Brown, I believe, right?
I believe so.
Excellent. Screw food photography. Let's talk about Eats, too, because you guys are making me too hungry. Some of your favorite restaurants in New York, Manhattan, or Brooklyn?
I suppose Andrew Camilini's new restaurant.
Oh, La Conda Verde? Yeah. I had one of the best all-around meals I've had in a long time.
It's one of those things where, you know, someone asks you that question about New York and you just go totally blank.
Yeah. I always have to define it as what area and what cuisine, so it's at least enough of a stall maneuver that I can, you know, process.
Still trying to find the amazing Indian restaurant, so if you guys know of any Indian foods, one I really, really love.
London? Not London.
I go for my spices in Jackson Heights, so I mean, most places around there, you know, are so direct to the source of where their ingredients are coming from, you know, that I think you can, it's a pretty good percentage of decent food in that area. See, you know, I always think of Curry Hill if I want that kind of food, or Chinatown if I want Chinese, but New York has become such a true melting pot and so eclectic with restaurants that you can find so many different cuisines in so many different ethnic neighborhoods. I mean, you've even seen what Chinatown has done to Little Italy. But there are also, you know, like Portuguese, Brazilian, this, that, in those two areas themselves.
Well, there's an amazing Sri Lankan restaurant in Staten Island that's sort of like a storefront on a main drag, that I've been to, called New Asha. And it's completely unassuming. And you go in and it's the most beautiful, authentic food from that part of the world that you can have in the city. I think it's, and it's been written up in a couple of different, you know, obscure places, but it's because it's so unassuming and it's in such a kind of an odd place that it takes you by surprise.
See, I think those are the wonderful benefits of being a food photographer: the travel, the aspect of finding these holes in the walls that are just those rough gems and have the most delicious food that you wouldn't have found otherwise than being sent there and trying to, you know, create this image of, you know, an oasis. On that note, we're kind of wrapping up our first episode of The Food Scene. I am Michael Harlan Turkel, your host, and I'd just like to thank our sponsor, Hearst Ranch, again. Produced by Jack Inslee, engineered by Nat Wiener. You're listening to us on heritageradionetwork.com. Check out our website, heritageradionetwork.com, for shows and archives and live calendar. You can call in live 718-497-2128. Email us at info@heritageradionetwork.com, and you can also find our podcast on iTunes. Again, Michael Harlan Turkel, and you are listening to The Food Scene.